This podcast is made possible by the patrons at patreon.com. To support the show, visit patreon.com/KeithBurgun. Hello and welcome to episode 13 of the Clockwork Game Design Podcast. I'm your host, Keith Burgun. Recently, I've been looking into replacing my vehicle, and I don't know anything about cars. I'm not a car person, but I do live kind of a little bit in the middle of nowhere, so the type of place where everywhere you want to go is 15 to 30 minutes away. So I do need a car where I live. I'm not in a city. And my car is a 2006 Subaru Forester with like 180,000 miles on it. And it's still doing fine, but I feel like I'm getting to the point where I might want to start looking into, you know, getting a new car. So I'm starting to do some little initial car research, and I'm watching a bunch of reviews for cars, and I'm also looking at like car manufacturers' websites and just, you know, seeing how they present the cars and just trying to kind of get myself a little bit acquainted with this world of cars so that I can make a better decision. But one thing that's interesting to me is just seeing how things get seen when they're new, and then kind of like looking at them 10 years later. And obviously cars are sort of special because they do deprecate in value over time. So a 10-year-old car, like assuming it was getting used, actually is worse than a brand new car. And that's not the case for video games, really, which I will be talking about later. But even still, it was interesting to me to look up reviews of my 2006 Forester when it first came out, or to look up promotional videos or promotional materials for that vehicle, and just to see how they tried to sell it. Because to me, that vehicle is very functional and it's a great car, but it's anything but the kind of sexy that I'm sure a marketing campaign will try to paint any new vehicle as. That's what's kind of funny, is that like every vehicle, no matter what it is, no matter how cheap it is and how just utilitarian it is, they always try to kind of suggest that it's, you know, super attractive and super comfortable, and regardless of what it actually is. So I was looking at these old reviews of my car from when it was new, and reminded me of something that I dealt with a lot back in the day with video games. I've mentioned before that I used to work at GameStop. Those are very hard for, I always confuse those. But I used to work at one of those, and that was really a formative experience for me. I mean, even when I started working there, I was already kind of aware of, video game consumerism and how our perceptions are kind of just weird about video games and about buying video games. Probably a more formative experience for me was when I was 11 years old. I had a large video game collection already that I'd been building up since I was like 3 years old. All I ever wanted for, you know, my birthdays, Christmas, those kind of things, was video games. And so by the time I was 11, I had a pretty good little collection going. And then the 3DO came out by Panasonic. I don't know if people remember that, but oh my God, did I buy the hype so bad for the 3DO. And I actually held a tag sale at my house and sold almost all of my video games. I think I kept like my Super Nintendo or one or two little things that were just, I wouldn't part with. But I sold almost everything to get a 3DO and some games. By the way, the 3DO was $700 back then. It was 1993, and that's a lot of money. I think I still didn't make enough money to actually buy the stupid thing. I think I made like $400 or $500, and my parents like helped me cover the rest or something. But, you know, the 3DO was a horrible tragedy. It within, I think, 6 months, they were selling it for $50. So it was that really kind of woke me up really hard about just hype. And, you know, it made me think back to like all those things that I sold to get this 3DO, and how, like, you know, they were really not any like less fun than this. In fact, a lot of them were a lot more fun and better quality things than what I just got. It's just that this thing was new. And so that really woke me up at a very young age to that phenomenon, which I think a lot of adults seem unaware of, actually, maybe because they've never had such a violent encounter with it before. So I've been doing a little bit of research on this idea of consumerism, which is something I've talked about before a little bit, but not recently. One thing I noticed is in my research that the term consumerism didn't refer to what I think most of us assume it means. Consumerism kind of refers to hyper-consumerism, which is sort of consuming things just for the sake of consuming things, to display a kind of identity. It's sort of fetishizing buying things. There's a whole package of, it's like a religion of buying things. And it's only sort of recent that the term consumerism started being used to refer to that, only in the 70s. And before that, it was more things like consumer rights and, like weird economic philosophies about what it means to be a consumer and what society should think of consumers as. So anyway, what I am talking about is hyper-consumerism, which is, consumerism for the sake of consuming. I think we've all noticed ourselves or loved ones. Actually, it's easier to notice probably in loved ones or any other person. When someone else buys something and it's a dumb purchase, it's very easy to see that in other people. It's a little harder to see in ourselves, for obvious reasons. We're rationalizing our purchases, obviously. But I think it's safe to say that almost all of us make at least some bad purchases, like some purchases we probably shouldn't make. Sometimes we do that. There's an idea of retail therapy, which is kind of like overeating, but for buying stuff. So you have like comfort food, and for some people, they have comfort buys. They'll just buy stuff. But a lot of consumerism and the idea of like just buying too much crap comes from imagining like a better version of yourself. Advertisements are a big part of this. Like, we grow up watching ads, and they're always telling us there's this better version of yourself that could exist, and the things you already have are flawed, and they're all crappy and dusty and gross, and I don't even know how you're continuing to use those things that you still have. They're so bad. You really need to get this new, great, awesome thing. You know, it's funny. I talked about storytelling and how stories express a value. You know, they have some controlling idea and it states something about the world. Well, advertisements are the same thing. They're these really, really short little stories that portray a value. And that value is the thing you already have sucks. And it's like, it's disgraceful that you're even still using it. Here's the thing that you really need that will make your life amazing. And you need to just like get this as soon as possible. And it's kind of interesting because I did a little research on this whole thing, and kids under 6 actually can't distinguish. Well, there's a study that shows that kids under 6 can't distinguish ads from programming. And I think anyone who has connection, you know, is used to dealing with kids at the age of 6 or under. I have a little bit of experience with that as a teacher. Can probably get behind the idea that, yeah, they probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference between ads and normal programming. And this same study said that kids under 8 can tell what's an ad and what's the program, but they can't tell that the ad necessarily has a, a motive, that it's trying to push something. They sort of, you know, those ideas are a little more sophisticated, and it takes a certain level of intelligence to like gather that. So if you think of that, we have generations of people who are brought up watching ads as kids, and these ads, it's just hard for me to believe that that wouldn't have any impact on us. This is on myself too, absolutely. Like I grew up watching, He-Man and Transformers and all these TV shows as a little kid, and there was constantly ads between them. And that messaging, obviously I don't, I grew up and I don't like literally believe that I need to get this product or my life will be bad. I consciously understand that those messages are false, but the fact is that I did sit and like absorb all that messaging for years and years and years, formative years of my life, and I think that's true for most people in a Western, developed country. So I just think it's something to be aware of. I'm not against commerce and buying things and products. And obviously, I mean, I am myself an entrepreneur business person who's trying to start a small business and sell products. And I actively buy products when I think that they're good. And when I think that they, when I try to make a good decision and, you know, and I buy things, and I think there's totally merit there. And there's nothing wrong with that inherently. Or I guess a better thing to say would be the conversation about whether the very concept of buying things, you know, capitalism in general or commercialism in general is bad or good is a much more large scope discussion than will take place on this podcast. And for now, let's assume it's fine. I mostly do assume it's fine, although I'm not certain that it's fine. I do think that it requires a certain amount of responsibility on the part of people. You know, it's kind of like democracy. It's like you are given this power to purchase things. And so you have a certain amount of responsibility to make smart choices. And part of that smart choices is knowing about advertising and how it has affected you and how much you've been impacted by this onslaught of messaging. So I think if you're ignorant of that, that's going to be a problem. So next I want to get into how does this apply to video games? And I think it's somewhat obvious so far. One thing that's occurred to me in the last 5 years or so is that this idea that buying video games is a lot more fun than playing them. For years, I sort of stopped playing games on Steam, for example. I did play TF2, and once in a while I would play Civ, I think, 4 and a little bit of 5, but that's pretty much it. And I, you know, here and there, maybe twice a year or something, I would check out some game that seemed worth checking out on Steam. But for the most part, I pretty much didn't play games on Steam. I played TF2, I guess it came out around 2007, until maybe 2011, 2012, something like that. I played a lot of TF2, I ran Steam because that was the application that Team Fortress required you to run. However, so I didn't really play games on Steam, but I did look at the Steam store. And now part of that, the reason I told myself I was doing that was like, oh, I just want to be in touch with what's coming out. I want to just make sure I'm aware of what's happening. And, you know, part of that is true. But I also think part of that is I want to buy something. Like I want there to be something that I can buy. And so I'm like looking for something to buy. And I would, you know, particularly notice that if like I have a little bit more spending money, that I would like look for something to buy. And I've noticed that on like Amazon as well. Like I'll sometimes just go looking for something to buy. And I think I'm less like this than a lot of people, partially because I have less money, but also because I think I'm more aware of this issue than a lot of people are. Yet I still notice it in myself. So this idea that buying games is more fun than playing them is that's kind of the big takeaway I want people to think about from this episode. So in the same way that products sort of paint this picture of this is what your life is going to be like after you have this product. It's going to be this amazing thing. Your life will be complete. You'll be happy and fulfilled when you have this product. Video games obviously do the same thing on the terms of a video game. So of an interactive system. So, you know, basically the idea is this is going to be so much fun. It's going to be such an experience. It's going to, you know, be really immersive, and there's going to be this crazy story, and you're going to play it for years, and you're going to connect with your friends over it, and all this stuff. And some of the best video game moments I've ever had, being a little kid especially, you know, getting some new game at the mall, and then on the ride home, like opening it up and looking at the manual and just, you know, going page after page and just imagining what this thing is going to be like. And that whole thing of the manual, that's something that really stuck with me. And I remember from, 2002, I think it was, till about 2007 or 8, I was super, super into Warcraft 3, one-on-one ladder matches. I just played thousands of those. And But, it, you know, I have major, major problems with that now. And I always did. But there was this idea of this, you know, modern strategy game that it put forward, especially in the manual. I remember I still have the manual kicking around somewhere. And I remember maybe in like 2010, this was a couple years after I stopped playing Warcraft 3 because of the huge problems I have with it and RTS games in general. But I found the manual and I was looking through it and it just struck me like, wow, like I remember what I thought this was going to be. And I remember hoping as I was playing this thing that this was going to be the thing that I thought it was going to be. And just feeling like, oh, I just got to get a little better at the execution. You know, I just got to get to a certain point in playing the game. And suddenly this really deep strategy game is going to appear to me. You know, it's this big promise. That's something I wrote about in my first book is that video games are like largely a promise of what video games can be. And, you know, for the most part, I think that promise has been unfulfilled. But I think that that's what we're buying. When we buy something, when we buy a video game, for the most part, very few exceptions, we are buying this idea of a video game. There's some actual research to back up what I'm saying, by the way. There was an Ars Technica study where they found that 36, this is looking at Steam data, they found that 36% of players, games rather, got completely never played at all, even once, that people bought. So of the games people are buying, 36% of them never get played. Another 17% of them get played for less than an hour, which is, you know, to me, sort of equivalent to basically never playing them. That's not what the player, you know, expected. I guess you could say that, you know, in some of those situations, or maybe most of those situations, they found that the game was bad or was just not what they were looking for. But either way, even just the 36% of people who just never even played the thing once, and, you know, some of that is, yeah, you know, maybe they just never got around to it. But some of it is, I think, really, there is a counter argument, I guess, that sounds like, well, you know, people probably intend to get to play those games, but they don't have time. But what they don't have time means is that they're prioritizing other things over that. So let's take out all procrastinated time, right? Like any wasted time, like doing things that you really don't intend to do, like just sitting on Facebook for a few hours or whatever it is you're doing, watching TV or something. So let's just look at the things that you actually elect to do. And if you don't put in playing that new game that you bought into that, it means that you don't prioritize it highly enough. And so, you know, the idea, there is some merit in the idea that, oh, well, people probably intend to play these games, they just don't get around to it. But I also think there's something to be said for the fact that, you know, they don't really want to play the game as much as they want to buy it. Here's what's interesting. They did set aside the time to go and buy the thing. Now, granted, that is easier to do than playing games. It takes a lot less time, but it does take money, and time is money. And so, you know, money is valuable, and people understand that. And video games are kind of expensive, especially when you talk about consoles and things like that. So, you know, sometimes we're talking about $300-$500, and people then just don't use the console and don't really play games on it. That happens. I've definitely seen that happen more than once. So, you know, the argument that people just don't get around to it has some merit, but there's also something else going on. And I think that, like I said, it is more fun to, it's a lot of fun. It's very compelling to buy a game. You're sitting there on the store front, whether it's digital or real, and looking at the back of the box or the info screenshots and the information, and you're imagining this awesome experience, this like really cool thing. And, you know, it's just, you feel so good, like being like, oh yeah, I'm totally getting this right now, boom. And it just, there's like a rush that you get from that. And I think especially for people who, you know, if you're down for whatever reason, if you're like a depressed person, or if you're kind of, you need, in the same way that people overeat and do other activities that are just compulsive, it's a comfort thing and it's a rush. And I think that that's just something that we all should be more aware of. There's another interesting thing. You know, obviously a big consumerism has a big, has a big hook with like new things, and video games. I mean, like, video games are just all about the new. And I remember working at GameStop, and people would come in. I remember there was one specific interaction that I had. Maybe I've talked about it before, where a customer came in and they wanted to buy, I think Final Fantasy X was out at the time. It was the brand new one. It was like $65 or whatever. And we also had Final Fantasy VII on the shelf for, I don't know, it was $10 or something, $10-$15. And I was telling them, like, you know, this is one of the most beloved JRPGs. If you're looking for a JRPG, you should totally get this. Because, by the way, Final Fantasy X is a PlayStation 2 game, and PlayStation 2s were completely reverse compatible to PlayStation 1. So, you know, the person could totally just play Final Fantasy 7 for, like, a fraction of the price. I think most Final Fantasy enthusiasts will tell you that 7 is better than 10, not all, but on the whole, 7 is a very highly beloved game for people who like JRPGs. And, but the guy, the person just, they just wanted the new one. And it was, to me, a very clear case of just this, like, cult of the new kind of, you know, really just like advertising brainwashing. And I sort of hesitate to use the word brainwashing because it's not like one ad does this to us. It's not like somebody watched an ad for Final Fantasy, the new one or whatever, and then went out and bought it. It's like we've been just raised in an environment of advertisements. And so we just constantly have that somewhere in the background of our psyche, that this rough, you know, fuzzy concept that we need to buy things to be happy. So yeah, any individual ad is not really effective on people, but growing up in a world of ads, I think, does something. And it's interesting to look at how people look at older games. I for a long time, I was a believer that like old games, like 80s games and stuff, were better than new games. I no longer believe that. But the point is that now I think they're kind of all bad. People incorrectly value new games over old games just because they're new and they use new technology, and a lot of that gets to this idea of sort of engineered scarcity. New technologies are really cool and really great because they allow us to do new things, but one thing that like advertisers and, you know, people trying to sell products do with new technologies, or the reason that they love new technologies, is because they say, hey, we have this magical box and you don't have this thing. You don't already have something that's like this. This is new. And so, you know, now they can retell that old story about how the thing you have is all crappy. This thing is all fantastic. Now, sometimes that's actually true. Like once in a while, there's a new technological advancement that really your old thing does kind of suck. If you had a dumb phone and someone else, and they introduced a smartphone to you, that's one of those few moments where it's like, wow, that actually would be like way, way better to have that. And it's true. And it really is. But those things are actually pretty rare. The claim that this thing is going to change your life and be all amazing and new is happening all over the time. Every time, like, you know, like I said, the 2006 Forrester probably made that claim somewhere in its marketing materials. Now, interestingly, in the same way that people kind of are always looking for a pill to do something, and the placebo effect has actually gotten stronger because everyone is sort of thinking, oh, like, we have this world of medicine and, you know, there's a pill for everything. So, you know, somebody gives you a sugar pill and it actually is more effective now than it was 100 years ago. We've actually studied that. In the same way, we live in this crazy technological revolution era. And so I think we're more susceptible to ads because we, you know, that hype of like, oh my God, this is a product that's going to change your life, actually has been true like numerous times in our lifetimes. Whereas, you know, someone 100 years ago, you know, maybe that happened to them once. But I'm saying that because those technological advancements actually are happening sometimes, it makes that hype effect even stronger, and it makes us more susceptible to this kind of messaging. So there's literally nothing that doesn't make that claim. And, you know, I think that's a big thing with consoles, is that you need to buy a whole new computer just to play the next Call of Duty or whatever it is. You know, that is like this engineered scarcity. And it's funny that that's something that really struck me back in the 2000s when I got really into emulation. And suddenly I just had like the entire library of all the NES games. And it's funny how that really changes your psychology with regards to these things. Like back in the day, if it was 1992 or 90, or I guess 1990, you know, any one of these NES games, I probably would have paid $30 to $50 for, if not more, because, you know, there was a scarcity to it. And I didn't have access to it, and I was like getting access to it. But then when you just get it all in this gigantic, like, you know, 10 gig like zip file or whatever, it's weird how that changes the equation. Like, I think in an unavoidable way, when you have more of anything, I guess its value goes down. There's like a supply demand thing there. But also, I really do feel like in that situation, you can kind of more clearly look at what these things really even are. You know, it's like compare like being in a hotel room and you're stuck there for a few days and there's like one book in the room and you're like, well, maybe I'll take a few flips through the pages, assuming you have no like huge biases for or against it. Like, let's say it's not a Bible or something. Let's say it's like, you know, some fiction novel from 1993 or something. It's just like there in the room. You know, you might just like kind of look through it. Whereas compare that to being in a library, and the books that get your attention and that like are seem really worthy of attention in a library, and how do you figure out which ones those are? Suddenly it becomes a much bigger project of actually trying to figure out like, well, which of these books should I really read? I can't read them all, obviously, you know, and every time you do read one, you're thinking of it differently. I remember that's another thing, going back to being a kid and getting some new game, and now you have just this one game. And again, that's that artificial scarcity sort of thing. You have this one game, and, you know, of course you kind of like love it because, like, first of all, it's new and it's fantastic, but you're also just kind of stuck with it. You know, you are pretty sure video games are awesome, and you have this video game in front of you, and so you're going to be like giving it tries, playing it over and over and over. I can't tell you how many times I played Castlevania 2, even though like it's really terrible, even by the standards of people who like those kinds of games. But I played it over and over and over and over again because I had it. And now if we were to play Castlevania 2 or most old games, we would play it for like 2 seconds and be like, yeah, okay, I get it. This is kind of dumb. And I think that the same thing is happening now with new games, but we just don't see it because that artificial scarcity is still there. So if you took some guy who's like super into Xbox 360 games or whatever, or I'm sorry, Xbox One, games, and just somehow gave him like a flash drive, and here's every Xbox One game, and you can just like flip through them on a nice little thing. I really wonder, and I think it's worth thinking about, like, how does that change his perception of video games? How do they look at them? Does that person just quit video games? That's kind of what I almost expect to happen. Either they quit video games entirely, or they find like one or two games in there that are actually worth playing, and they just play those. But it would like totally, I feel like it would really tank their, having that kind of an experience would really change the way that they buy games in the future. Because it breaks this spell, this illusion that we have that games are these magical things, new games are these magical things that come out of nowhere, and they sort of shows us a little bit, it's kind of like seeing how the sausage is made a little bit. I think that being aware of the consumerist world that we're hyper-consumerist world that we're all brought up in is extremely important. You know, I think game developers are going to be they've been embracing this and they're going to be doing it even more. Free-to-play games are really interesting on this regard because they now bring the market into the game. So now you can shop for stuff to buy while you're in the game. That's being embraced now, and that'll probably only be more embraced in the future. And, you know, I notice it myself. I've mentioned that I play League of Legends, and I probably own only through, like, you know, the you just play a bunch of games and you get the IP points, and then you can buy. I don't spend any money on League of Legends, but I've unlocked probably, I don't know, 60 characters or something. And, you know, I play maybe half of those, and yet I'm still, like, looking to, like, buy new characters and stuff. And it's like, I need to play the ones I already have. And I'm still doing the thing that I know is stupid and a product of, like, this weird brainwashing. And that's how powerful it is. It's just, I think we should all be aware of that weird transformation that happens. Like, the moment you buy something, you're looking at it on the shelf, it's, like, all amazing and everything. And then you buy it and you take it home, and now it's something different. Now it's just another thing, kind of. Or that transition happens over the matter of a course of a couple of weeks at the most. And something that I've thought about is a very weird anomaly in our life is returning things. Returning things almost feels like a weird cheat code thing. Because you can get that or rush of, oh my God, I bought this new crazy amazing thing. Bring it home, have that, like, you know, wow, I really have this thing. Cool, I'm, you know, fulfilling my destiny that the advertisements always said I would. And then it'll wear off, and then a couple days later, you bring it back and get your full money back. And, like, it's a weird experience. I don't know if other people have had that experience before, but I'm actually a huge fan of returning things. I'm only getting into it now. Partially because I've only ever really had money to buy anything recently. But, you know, I think that's something to think about. And I think that will also, if people keep the idea of returning things in their head more as they buy things, I don't think people return things enough. But I think if they keep that more in mind, it'll help them to kind of exercise that part of their brain that kind of looks forward to, how am I going to perceive this in 2 weeks or 6 months after I buy it? You know, what is this thing going to look like? So that's kind of, maybe that's one question that people can ask themselves when they're kind of getting all consumer eyeballed is, you know, what is this thing I'm considering buying going to look like in a month, 6 months, or 5 years, or even 10 years, depending on what the product is. To me, video games and games in general are kind of long-term things. They, you know, for the most part, especially, you know, clockwork games, like evergreen decision, you know, contests of decision-making. Puzzles and sort of things like that, maybe not quite as much, but, you know, I think that's something to think about. So that's really all I wanted to say on this episode was, you know, let's try to be aware of this sort of programming that we're all built with, and, you know, keep that in mind when we're purchasing stuff. And it's funny because, you know, I'm, like I said, I sell video games, and I'm going to make an ad, and my ad will be sort of cashing in a little bit. You know, any ad inherently is going to be benefiting from the sort of brainwashing that we've all had. It's impossible to make an ad that doesn't do that, really, because it's offering something. And, you know, you're trying to hype it, obviously. You're trying to create hype. Hype is inherently kind of, I wonder if there's, like, honest hype. Like, you know, even if something ends up being this actual great thing, like a smartphone, hyping is, you know, is sort of, I think, inherently an effort to kind of oversell something or to make things seem greater than they are and make them seem like this answer to your life's problems. And so I think that's something we should all be aware of. But I think that's just about all I've got to say on the topic. So let me know what you think in the comments, and I look forward to discussions. I think the last couple episodes have gotten some really good comments. If you haven't checked my site, if you just listen to this through you know, some kind of like a podcasting app or something, check out keithbergun.net because there's some good comments on the posts and some good conversations from some smart people. And so thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you again in a little while. This podcast is made possible by the patrons at patreon.com. To support the show, visit patreon.com/keithbergun.